Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. And welcome to Buddhism in a Nutshell, Class 3. Today is Tuesday, November 21st. Is there anybody here for the first time? So you all roped friends to come? Is that what's going on? Because you all not here alone. One person came by themselves? Hi. Everybody in the class has introduced themselves, so they all know each other pretty well. We're very... very laid-back class. We like discussion. Do you have any background in Buddhism at all? Just reading about it? Just curious today?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yes, you do a little bit? Okay. Because all we did in the first two classes, the first one was literally just the historical knowledge about Buddhism, who the Buddha was, how it crossed the world. So very basic. And then we're touching on the concepts of what the mind is. So it's pretty easy. This is really Buddhism in a Nutshell 101, so we'll keep it light. For those who are here the first time, on our website, all of the handouts that we talk about, all of the meditations that we are, they're all up on our website. Kadampa-center.org, go to spiritual programs, introductory courses, and then find Buddhism in a Nutshell. And all of the handouts, all of the different meditations that we're doing are up on that website right there. So feel free to print them off. As we start to do different meditations, this is the time to practice. Feel free to go down and check the cushions out. Get up. So, again, this is a very easy class. If you want a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a glass of water, help yourself. Just make sure you wash your own coffee cups. And the restrooms are right out that door to the left around the corner. And let's start with a brief meditation that just brings our awareness to the class. And this actually helps me as much, if not more, than it helps you, because I tend to get a little fragmented and scattered before I come. So these are just nice for me. You may start notice a pattern, because what I like to do is at the beginning of the class, I try to do the meditation that we ended with last time. And then I'll do a new one at the end of this class. That way it's a way to introduce you to meditations where you get to try them like two times, kind of a good introduction to get you through a few things. And then my goal is the last class, the fifth class, if we plan it right, then at the end of that class, what we'll do is an analytical meditation. So one of the things we talked about briefly, I'll save it for after the meditation. That'll get us more focused. Okay, so I'm going to take a vote. Does anybody want me to go through the seven-point meditation posture again, or do you all feel pretty comfortable with that now? Go through it again? Okay, so let's just go ahead and we'll go through the whole seven-point meditation posture. And I think we ended with counting the breaths, right? Okay, so let's do that. Okay, so the meditation posture that we talk about here, again, everything that I talk about is from the Tibetan Buddhist perspective. It's very common sense. There's nothing woo-woo about sitting at the cushion, okay? It's very common sense. Your legs, if possible, if you're on the cushions, to sit in a full lotus, half lotus, or cross-legged position. Whatever's going to be more comfortable. If you're sitting in a chair, just sit up a little bit closer. You can pick up one of the cushions to put on the floor so your feet are kind of balanced on the floor. Get a full, nice root. Sit forward just a little bit so you're not leaning back and sluggish, but you're kind of looking for a base position that you can hold comfortably for a period of time. Our period is short, but eventually we're hoping for longer. Your arms, your hands are going to be, the right hand is placed on the left, thumbs touching together, and you're going to put this basically right underneath your navel. Okay, and what that does is it causes you to actually keep your arms kind of akimbo. That's always a funny word. But what that does is allow air to flow. Okay, so it's not like we're all this hunched over closed. We're opening it up. There's a lot of different symbolism to the different hand mudras, the way the hands are laid out. It's kind of that teardrop shape. The hands are open and giving. I mean, there's multiple layers of meaning here. But put your hands in your arms like this. Your back is very important. It needs to be straight but not real stiff. Bring your shoulders out a little bit because that opens up your lungs. It helps you to be straight And why is that? Okay, so if you're slumped over, you tend to get sluggish and could fall asleep. If you're too stiff, you could get tense. So eyes. In the beginning, a lot of people meditate with their eyes closed in the beginning because they're just too distracted by things. But what they say is the best way to do it is to have your eyes just slightly unfocused, maybe 3 or 4 feet in front of you. And why is that? If you close your eyes, you could get sleepy and tired. If you have them too wide open, you could get distracted by what you see out there. The jaw and the mouth. So you don't want to have clenched teeth while you're doing this because we're trying to relax a little bit. So your jaw should be a little bit relaxed, your teeth slightly apart, and your tongue will be resting on your palate just above your back, just above your teeth. Now, why is that? It's to help so that not too much saliva forms. Again, we're trying to come up with something, a way to have a very stable position without a lot of distractions, and they have been working on this for over 2,500 years. So it's very common sense, and they pretty much have got it down now. The head is slightly tilted forward. It's not down for sluggishness. It's not too far up. The way that I like to kind of think about it is if I have a string that's on the crown of my head and I pull it, it causes me to elongate my neck and bring my head down a little bit and keep my back straight. So some people talk about it like a stack of coins. So it's like just a slightly stacked head down just a little bit. Okay. Focus your attention on your breathing. As you inhale and exhale naturally, just breathe naturally. Focus your mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle, become calm and present, ready to engage in meditation. We're going to set a motivation. Let's create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session. Think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate, develop your mind, to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. It's kind of that ripple effect. If we take care of ourselves and we're better people, then the people around us benefit and the people around them benefit and so forth. Start by focusing your attention at the opening of the nostrils. Pay attention to the very subtle sensations as you breathe in and out through your nose. You can feel certain sensations as the air passes. As the small hairs move, cooler sensations as you inhale, warmer as you exhale. Don't follow the air into your body or out into the surrounding environment. Place your attention on the sensations associated with the breath at the opening of your nostrils. And your job is to keep your attention firmly placed on those sensations only. As you inhale and exhale, mentally count each inhalation and exhalation together as one. And we're going to count from 1 to 10, concentrating on those sensations. When you reach 10, begin again at 1. So in, out. So 1. In, out is 2. In, out is 3. Breathe at your own pace. Naturally, do your counting. When you get to 10, start again at 1. If at any time you find that you are distracted, start over. Because that's the practice. Even if you only get to 4 and have to start over all the time, that's part of what meditation is. So I'm going to be quiet. We're going to do this for 4 minutes. I will keep track of time. You keep track of your breaths. Okay, slowly bring your attention back to the room. And let's dedicate the positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. So I'm going to repeat just a little bit because I had a couple of good questions before we started class. These are called concentration meditations, the ones that we have been doing since this class started. Counting the breath, scanning the body, just some of those basic things that we've been doing, bare attention. These are all concentration meditations. In Tibetan Buddhism, there's two kinds of meditation. The concentration meditation, which is kind of strengthening your mind, getting your mind used to becoming familiar with things, familiar with the breath, familiar with analyzing some different things that are just right there, just concentration. It's kind of like going to the gym before you go and do the marathon. You've got to build up your muscles before you can go do that big event. Concentration meditation is exactly like that. Analytical meditation is actually going and running the marathon. So the analytical meditation is when you actually work with your mind, when you'll argue with yourself. You pick a topic, a concept, things like this, and you'll start to work with things. Okay, whether it's anger or love or just these big concepts, we'll get real specific about things. There's one that I'll do with you at the end called equanimity, and that's an analytical meditation that I'll narrate for you that you can work with your mind, learn to work with your mind so that you can see the difference of the two. Okay, so the hope is that you become familiar with meditation, and that's what meditation is, becoming familiar with. So you learn to work with your mind. The hard part is that the analogy would be that you are a car mechanic working on a car while it's racing down the freeway. It's not easy, okay? And that's why a lot of people struggle with it. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, that idea of just going and sitting and meditating and thinking about nothing is actually not even possible. You cannot tell your mind not to think of something. Your mind does not work that way. Okay, so we've got to give your mind something to work on. Okay, we give our mind something to work with. How my mind works is different from how your mind works or how your mind works. We all have different minds and our minds all work differently. So we're responsible for learning to work with our own minds. And these are a bunch of techniques that they have developed, again, over the last 2,500 years, to learn how to work with our minds. And that's what Buddhism is all about. Everything that you see in this room, everything that I talk about is all about the mind and all about learning to work with our minds. Everything. These colors, these flags, these paintings, these pictures, these statues, everything in here is just techniques and tools to learn to work with your mind. Okay, so we'll do an analytical meditation at the last session. I'll try to leave us about 15 minutes to work on that, just so you can see the difference. Now, there's many different types of meditation, especially here in the West, where they say, oh, your doctors will tell you, you've got to go meditate, you need to go meditate, you need to become less stressed, right? And you hear that. And so you go and you get some meditation thing that has you lay down and, you know, hear ocean waves and, you know, kind of try to space out. And that is good, but from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, if you do this type of meditation and you start to work with this really well, a byproduct of this is less stress. A byproduct of this kind of meditation is exactly what the Westerners are searching for in these, you know, anger management, stress-free meditations that they have. It's a byproduct. It's going to happen because as your mind settles and begins to learn how to work with itself, that's a byproduct. It's true for me. It's very true. It's worked very well for me. My husband can very much tell when I'm not doing my regular meditation practice. When I'm doing it, I'm just easier going. And when I'm not doing it, I'm a little bit more hyper, believe it or not. Any questions about what we've talked about so far in class? And I do. I'm opening this up. If you all have questions, this is the place and the time to ask. So if there are any questions about what we have going on, something I talked about last time, something that you read, ask it. We try to keep this, again, pretty open. So far, we've talked about the life of Shakyamuni Buddha, some of the history of Buddhism, How Tibetan Buddhists View the Mind. We're talking about the Four Noble Truths. We're going to continue to talk about that through the whole class. That's the first teaching of the Buddha, and it's probably one of his main teachings, so we're still splitting that up and defining that a little bit. What it means to be a Buddhist. So we've kind of done all of those things so far. So tonight we'll just do a brief review. We'll continue to discuss the mind, and then we're going to get into a little bit more deeper discussion about some of the topics we've been just slightly touching on, which is rebirth and karma, and that will hopefully set us up for the last couple of classes where we'll get into some of that a little bit different. So let's go. Okay, so the review. Again, y'all can go look up the books and stuff so you know when the Buddha lived, you know the history of the Buddha. But let's talk about the fact that everything is about the mind. This is where I got to get up. I get too excited. Okay, the positive states of mind leads to happiness, developing those, removing the negative states of mind that cause suffering, and that's actually the definition of enlightenment. It is right there. Get rid of all the ick, bring in all the good. It's that simple. We talked about the positive states of mind, some of the things we listed last week. I love they didn't erase my board. Joy, happiness, confidence, compassion, patience. I forgot to look that word up. Compersion. I forgot to look that up because that's a new word to me. Love. So all of these are positive, and if we got rid of anger and hate and fear, jealousy, impatience, ignorance, confusion, envy, attachment, we'll talk about that word a little bit. If we actually got rid of all of these things, and only had these, you can just imagine how much happier you would be, right? I mean, we can all agree with that. Is there anybody that doesn't agree with that? Anybody that wants to discuss that? It's pretty duh, right? But how do we do it? How do we do it? So we have this Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. Again, suffering, suffering, suffering. Admitting you're sick, going to the doctor to define the cause, getting that diagnosis, then we get the medicine, and then we actually have to take the medicine. So what is that medicine? What is that medicine? So what is the path when they talk about that? What is that? Okay. We're just going to touch on this because this is going to be, we're going to go into it more in the last class. Renunciation. This does not mean you have to go give up everything you own and go live in the woods. There's a different meaning for renunciation. Bodhicitta, one of my favorite words, and I can never spell it right, so never mind. Bodhicitta. Bodhicitta means boundless, endless love for others. There's a big, deep meaning we'll get into later, but it's selfless love for others. Okay? Compassion, love in the biggest sense of the word. I'll give you the full formal definition for it now, but it is about boundless, endless, compassionate love. Okay? And wisdom. And the way that they'll say that is sometimes the wisdom of emptiness. And we're going to talk about emptiness in the last class because that's that big concept that is very hard to get. So this is the path. So this is the medicine. This is what we have to learn. Okay? Renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. And so we'll talk about all these more toward the last class, but I'm just trying to give you that full scope. I'll just throw teasers out there so you can start to kind of work on that. And remember, when we talk about suffering, we're breaking that up. Who remembers that word that we used last time? I gave you a word that when you hear the word suffering from a wisdom point of view, what did I say? Dukkha. Why did I say dukkha? Because when we, from a Western perspective, think of suffering, what do we think? We just think of pain. Ouch. You know, you got hit by a car, you broke your leg, you have cancer. We think of that big, icky, ouch sickness. But there's so many other types of suffering. Suffering of change and all pervasive suffering. These are the types of suffering that we talked about that we're kind of rolling into one. Okay? The suffering of change, that things change. We think that those outside things are going to give us happiness, right? I got a new car. I got a new job. I got a new husband, whatever that's out there that we think is coming in here that's going to give us happiness, but then something changes. That car gets broken, okay? That husband leaves you, okay? Any of those things that happen, all of a sudden now you're, if you're attaching that happiness to the outside things, those things change. Everything changes. Impermanence is another big word here in Buddhism. Impermanence. Everything changes. Can you guys name one thing in our lives that never changes? What's that? Our past. That's actually really good. But actually, your past will change from your memory changing and things. Okay? We're also talking about it's getting longer. Oh, I love this. I love when I got help. Yeah, so your past is changing every minute. Love you. Thank you. That was great. I wish I'd have come up with that one. Okay. What's that? The vacuum of space is also changing. Okay, with black holes and things, and they're discovering more. Yeah.
But that's not a thing.
That's not actually a thing, too. So we're kind of talking a little bit things here, not so much concepts. It's expanding. Okay, but we think, so let's just get kind of a little bit more basic because we all went to huge concepts right away. Rocks, chairs, okay, things that we think of as permanent, they're not, okay? These permanent things that we become attached to, they're changing all the time, okay? We think that we're going to, you know, live our lives. Everybody on this planet dies. For some reason, we don't seem to accept that. There's not a person or a thing or a living thing that gets out of it. Okay, you think that we get so surprised when all of a sudden we go to the doctor and we find out we're sick. We get so surprised when something happens. But things are changing all the time. So part of this impermanence, again, I'm going to just skate over some of these concepts. But impermanence is a big one that we don't talk about enough. Everything changes, but we have this expectation that everything is going to stay the same. And then when things change, we have a problem. Okay, and then the all-pervasive, this one's a little bit harder to explain, a little bit harder to grasp, just because we live in this life, samsara, we have this kind of always a general unease. I mean, one of the reasons y'all are here is you're searchers, right, seekers. Okay, so it's, you know that there's something more, so we just are always kind of looking. I mean, there's, again, there's 15 different levels of every single word on this board. So it's just touching on things. But when we talk about suffering, I want you to think about all these things, not just the ouch. I want you to think about the mental suffering, all these other deeper levels. That's why I use that word, dukkha. Okay? I think there's two K's. For some reason, I'm having a hard time spelling tonight. Yep.
Can you basically hit on the topic of renunciation?
Okay, so renunciation. Let's go there. Now, I'm only going to skate on this one because this one goes to the last class. Okay, so class 5. We're in class 3, but I'll just touch it. So renunciation, again, it does not mean that I'm going to go and give up all of my belongings and go live in the woods, okay? I'm not going to become a hermit. Some people do that, and it can work very well. But if I give up attachment for things, let's go to attachment. This will help. The definition, the actual definition for attachment, I want to get that so I can be very specific. Attachment is a disturbing thought that exaggerates the positive qualities of an object and wishes to possess it on top of the 6 root delusions. So all that to say this. From a Western perspective, we use the word attachment as I'm very attached to my cat. I'm very attached to my kids. I'm very attached. So we kind of use that word as a good thing, right? That means I love them, right? But attachment means that I put all of the I into that. It's not about you. It's about what you do for me. I love Bob because of what he does for me. I'm attached to him because of what he does for me. If I truly loved him, then it would be about what is good for Bob, right? So let's go into the definition of love from a Buddhist perspective. Love, in a Buddhist perspective, means that you wish that person or that being to be happy. Okay, that's, can we all agree on that definition? You want that other being to be happy, no matter what, right? You just want that other being to be happy. What's a good definition for compassion? You don't want that other being to ever suffer. Fair? Attachment means that it's not, I want you to be happy as long as I'm happy too. Okay? We have the I in it, right? Because if we truly love that person, even if he wanted to break up with me because he fell in love with somebody else, I want him to be happy. So there would not be any frustration or anger or attachment there. I wouldn't be mad at him. I might be sad, but I would understand because that other person might be better for you. Love that other person for whatever reason, right? How many in here have children? Okay. So in kind of my point of view, having children, you want your kids to be happy really no matter what, don't you? And we try to work on that, even if it means that they're going to move away from home. All these things that we don't like. I want you to go out. I want you to have a good time with your friends, even though I'd rather you stay at home watch a movie with me. So we can have that kind of selfless love a little bit, most of the time, sometimes not so selfless. But that take the eye away from it. Are you kind of grasping this a little bit? Okay, so attachment means it's all really more about me. Okay, that there's a reason that I have this thing. Attachment means I'm going to get around to this, but you have to understand this before you can get to that. You're at a restaurant. I am dying for that piece of carrot cake because I love that cream cheese frosting, obviously, right? So you order it. You've got this nice restaurant. You've had this wonderful meal, and now I've ordered carrot cake, and they come back, and they bring me chocolate. Well, now I'm upset because I was really attached to that carrot cake. I wanted that carrot. So this is my mind. I'm all stuck on that. Instead of, oh, I like chocolate cake, too. But it's that instant attachment that I wanted that. So we get attached to these ideas of things. Okay? I'm attached. I just got a new computer because my computer died Wednesday night. So I'm kind of attached to this thing. It's new. It's shiny. It has no... So I'm trying to take very good care of it. I'm very attached to it. And I guarantee you the first time I drop it or I put a scratch in it, I'm not going to be so attached or I'm going to be mad about it because now I've ruined it or I've done something. I've hurt it. So I'm attached to this new computer, which is going to change, right? So it's this feeling of attachment that we get, which is why we get upset about things when they change, when these things change. So attachment kind of goes along with all of these things. If we can work on renunciation to not have attachment to things, okay, to not have this, we recognize it when it's happening. I can give you specific examples. I got this little ear cuff. It is just a little ear cuff. But my mom gave it to me. So I'm attached to it. Okay? She passed away a long time ago. I'm attached to this. I can't even tell you how many times I've lost this thing. And I try to just work with it. Let it go. It's okay. I still have the memories. It doesn't matter. This is just a thing. Okay? So it's me trying to work with it. And then later I'll find it. And it's like, oh, yay. Okay, but it's me working with my mind to not be upset because I've lost this little stupid piece of metal that doesn't really, you know, what is it? So it's trying to work with your mind to not have this where I'm going to get all upset because I lose a little piece of metal, right? But it's all the things that we add to this because of our emotions and minds. And so it's trying to work with not having attachment. That's what renunciation really is. Okay, it doesn't mean losing the stuff. You still have the stuff, but how attached to it? If you lose it tomorrow, are you still going to be a happy person? If I lose that computer tomorrow, am I still going to be happy? I may be a little frustrated. I'm not going to blow up because I've learned to work with things. Okay? 5 years ago, if I dropped that computer or had a, you know, somebody take it or something, I can guarantee you I wouldn't handle it as smoothly as I do today because I'm learning. Okay? I will still get frustrated. I would still call the cops if somebody took it. Okay, but it's just learning to work with that. Does that make a little sense? We'll get into it a lot deeper in the fifth class. Okay, but that's kind of where we're talking about here. Okay, and the wisdom of emptiness, that's just talking about, and again, that'll be the whole last class, seeing things as they really are. So this is the actual path that we do, and we'll talk about this in more detail. Okay, any questions about anything so far? Any additions?
Yeah.
Go for it. These guys are both deep studiers, okay? Oh, yes. So feel free to ask them. I pull them up too. Let's keep going. The definition of the mind. I want to go back to this too. So the mind is non-physical. It is not the brain. So when we're talking about the mind, it is not the brain. And when we're talking about the mind, again, from a Buddhist perspective, so we tend to, even though I'm saying it, if I asked you guys to point to your mind, what would you all do? We'd do that, wouldn't we? When I'm talking about the mind, I'm really talking about kind of this mind-heart combination. So it's a little bit our emotions and things too, our experiences. So we tend to think of the mind, even though I say it's not physical, we're all still going to do this. Some people will point to their hearts. Some cultures would point to their hearts rather than up here. So it's really funny that we tend to be so literal in the Western world. We'll still try to define a place for it. So the definition of the mind is non-physical. It is not the brain. It is clear, like clear sky, clear lake, a mirror. It is aware. Six senses, sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, and mental awareness. We add that in a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. The function is to know, and it has no beginning, and is continually changing, and that gives us the ability to change our minds. And I don't mean I change my mind, I'm going to go watch Thor instead of, you know, whatever those other movies are. Whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about we have the ability to create a more positive, calm mind. We have the ability to do that. Each of us individually can do it. That's what is so empowering about this. Okay? So a fundamental concept in Buddhism is that the mind is continually changing. And we have the ability to change it. We have the ability to become happier people because we choose to. We can choose to do this. How do we react to things that happen, whether they're good or bad? We can control it. And so, therefore, we have the ability to create the causes of our own happiness. It's really that simple. Simple to say, a little bit more challenging to do. So how do we do it? We look at our mind. We study and we practice. What do we study? The Lam Rim. In Tibetan Buddhism, we study the Lam Rim, and that is the original Buddhist for Dummies book. It is a compilation of all the Buddhist teachings. Okay? This is all the Buddhist teachings kind of laid out with a great curriculum. It's got an outline, and you can just go through this study. And part of it is the Four Noble Truths and all the things that we talk about here at Kadampa Center. They're all part of the Lam Rim. So what does it mean to be Buddhist? It means we're looking inside for our happiness. We're not looking out there. So all the things we talked about last class, I'm really flying through them. So stop me if you want to talk about the Four Noble Truths. We talked about all of these already. Admit you're sick, the diagnosis, treatment, and medicine. Take the medicine, and what is the medicine? It's those three principal aspects of the path. Remember I told you Tibetan Buddhism is a list and lists and lists? Three of those, eight of those, ten of those, there's three. That's the path. Okay? These are the truth of suffering, pain, suffering of change, pervasive, compounded suffering. We talked about that already. We talked about the six root delusions. Just about all of these things that we ever talk about, you can find in here. Ignorance, anger, attachment, we discussed more. Pride, doubt, wrong view. There's a state of complete cessation of suffering and its causes, which is nirvana. You've heard that word a lot, nirvana. As the mental afflictions and the karmic imprints arising from negative actions are adventitious rather than intrinsic to the pure nature of the mind, it is possible to completely purify the mind of these negative aspects and to develop the mind to its fully enlightened state. Okay, how do I say this easily? Adventitious, intrinsic. I have a great big jug of water here. Picture a great big jug of just pure, clear water, okay? I just dump in a whole bunch of handfuls of rock and dirt, shake it up, and now I've got rock and dirt in this water, okay? I can literally take a strainer and pour that out into another jug, and I can take out those impurities, can't I? Okay, that's what it means by adventitious rather than intrinsic. That dirt and mud, that negative, is not a part of the water. Our minds are like that clear water, and that dirt and rocks and mud are the negative that we can take out. Make sense? okay, pure clear water, put a bunch of gunk in it. That stuff is not part of the water. It's still just floating in the water. The sky, that clear blue sky, our minds are like that. And the clouds passing through, those thoughts, whether negative or positive, those are thoughts that we can control. Okay, so our mind is this pure, clear thing, and we have the choice. A garden. Are we planting roses or are we planting weeds? I'm just going to try to keep throwing analogies and stuff at you so you can try to grasp this concept of our mind. We have the choice of what we put into it or what we allow to stay in it or how we react to these positive and negative things. We can control that. Okay, the truth of the path. Principal aspects of the path. And again, there are full classes of this. You can study this for months, and if not years. You can study each one of those for months, and if not years. And we still have maybe a half an hour left. So you're not going to get all of this. If I can just get you to where you're just seeing a glimmer of light, then I'm good. Okay? Just a little tease to at least have that little bit of, okay, I think I get it. Okay, renunciation, bodhicitta, wisdom of emptiness. Negative mind, okay, anger, attachment, pride, doubt, ignorance, wrong view, same things. These are delusions, negative minds. We talk about the things that kind of cause them, the lines at the grocery store, the lines at the DMV. That's where some of this anger and impatience is. So it's thinking. I want you to start thinking of these triggers for your mind. What causes you to be impatient? What causes you to get angry? What causes you to feel pride? Somebody at work starts getting on you about something that happened and you have that sense of pride. They may have a good idea, but it didn't come from you. So you can have this pride thing come up in not a good way. Okay? So it's really interesting. You feel like you get in trouble and it's like not. They're wrong and you know it. So it's, you have this pride is not necessarily a good thing. So try to think about when your mind goes negative, you know, just be aware. Okay? The red lights for me were a big thing because I'm always going someplace. I hate being late for meetings. So I told you, I have little triggers. I have things that I use, just like the mindfulness bells that people can have on their phones now, right? So think about what your triggers are. Standing in the grocery line, red lights, you know, some of these things, and they don't all have to be negative. Okay, so I have triggers that I use for positive thoughts. I've told you about these. The ambulance. Whenever I hear an ambulance, I say a prayer because I know somebody at the other end of that ambulance is in pain, whether physically, mentally, or something. So I say a prayer. It's really hard when you work with a hospital a lot. So I'm there, but they know me now, so it's like, oh, she's saying a prayer. It's just what I do. So it's how I become and try to work with my mind and try to stay aware in my everyday life. Okay, Buddhism is about a practice and a science of the mind. It's not just when you're meditating. You try to bring it into everyday life. The word Kadampa, our center is called Kadampa Center. The word Kadampa means those who try to practice the Buddhist teachings in everyday life. So I really do try to do it. So I try to find little things that work for me. Again, you need to find the things that work for you. You know, try to think of your triggers. Try to think of what makes you angry, what makes you impatient, or what do the feel-good things. It's not all about the negative. When do you feel happy? When you're giving? When you're helping somebody? That's when you feel good about things? What makes you feel good? So it's trying. These are your actions. Not about getting stuff. This new computer makes me feel good. Don't go there. Try to think about what mentally does and then break it down. So these are some of my triggers, okay? The red light, mindfulness bells, ambulances. Again, this is about you guys trying to, I'm telling you mine in order to help you try to think of some things for yourself. There's other practices. Some people use practices like going up the stairs, okay? So you're climbing, not only are you getting a workout, but you can think about I'm taking people, you know, from a dungeon up to, you know, enlightenment. So, I mean, there's different things you can do. Or if you're going down the stairs, I'm going down there to help people. There's all kinds of different triggers and things that you can do for yourself. Questions yet? Yes, sir. Okay, wait, we're going to start using the mic again because I've been pretty good. I have a very small head and this thing does not stay on me very well.
I read your slides about mind. is one character you not mind. The definition of the mind.
Oh, the definition of the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
There.
So you mentioned it's continually changing.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder is what you are talking about in this is today, the pure true nature of the mind or just function of the mind.
So one of the things I like when people ask questions is when they're anticipating where I'm going next. So that's a great question. And guess what? I got a slide for you. Okay. Let's see if it goes here. Which one is it? Can you hold that thought? Because I'm going to be talking about that coming up here. Okay? That's a great question. So everything has a cause. And because the mind is non-physical, it can only be produced by something non-physical. All right? So the mind is non-physical, so it can only be produced by something non-physical. This is cause and effect. We're going to start touching on some of the karma stuff, and that is going to come up. Each moment of mind is produced by a previous moment of mind. And here's how we get into what's called the continuity of consciousness, rebirth. There's a difference between rebirth and reincarnation. We talk about rebirth because of where I'm going to go with his question here. Okay, so each moment of mind is produced by a previous moment of mind. We did this at the last class where I asked you, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Everybody can pretty much think of what they had for breakfast. What did you have for dinner last night? So I can take you back to previous moments of mind just like that. What did you do for your birthday last year? What did you do for your birthday when you were 10 years old? So, see, I can take you kind of back to those types of field moments, right? Now, what if I said, okay, so just coming here to Kadampa Center, what did you have to do to come here to Kadampa Center? Let's break it down. You had to think about it. You had to remember it. Okay? You kept it in your mind all day. Oh, I've got to go sit and listen to Sandy Yak at 7 o'clock tonight. Then you had to actually get up and go get in your car. You had to physically, and you don't just do it. Your mind is telling your body, right? Go get in the car. And then you had to drive here. So you have all of these moments. You had to pass through. You had to drive. You had to be aware of the road. You were passing cars. You were driving here. You had all the different thoughts while you were driving here. So I can literally take you through moments like this. Do you see where this is going? Moments. In Tibet Buddhism, they say every mind moment, 65 mind moments in every snap of the fingers. We are only aware of a few of these. Okay, 65 mind moments in every single snap of the fingers. Again, follow your memories back. You can kind of do it. Pick something. Pick food and go back by your meals. Pick your birthdays. Go back by your birthdays. Pick something that you're going to remember. What's the first memory that you can actually remember? What's your first young memory? Mine is, I remember probably being about 3 or 4 years old, living over in Germany. My dad was military and playing Ring Around the Rosie with our maid who was getting married. I remember doing that, and I remember riding a bike on cobblestone streets. That's the first real actual memory that I feel like I have versus some of the memories that my parents have. So try to remember. These are your mind moments. These are the large ones. These are what are called gross memories, gross mind moments. You have a question?
Just that 65 is a very specific number. I mean,
65, again, Buddhists have lists for everything.
Well, right, but where did they come up with it?
So I don't know specifically where they come from, but this is where 2,500 years they've looked at it. Now, we'll talk about that in a second, but let me go to this next slide because then I can answer both of those questions in one. So our mind moments, we're aware of our gross mind, right? We're aware of the things that we just talked about, your dinners, what do you have to do, what's happening every day. This is kind of your larger memories. We have the subtle mind. That's kind of the subconscious. That's kind of that stuff that happens in the back of your mind, you know, like when you wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, that's who that was. You've been thinking about it. So we have the kind of that subtle subconscious mind. And then we have the most subtle. That's yours. That's your clear. So we have that little pure clear nature. That is the most subtle part. That is actually the part that gets reborn. Okay? Not all of this other stuff. That little subtle mind, that little kernel of the purity, that's what gets reborn. So the 65 mind moments is breaking into all of these, and I don't know where they came up with that number. That's the number I was given. That's the number I use. So part of it is, if we can clear did you ever come up with?
No, but I know I've heard Robbie talk about it, who's a physician. And when he talks about subtle and most subtle, these are things that you're not really aware of. Like the most subtle, I mean, you're having to breathe. These are things that you do that you're not aware of.
Yeah.
Like just before you fall asleep, just before you lose consciousness, if you have a brain injury or something, just that moment right before you lose consciousness. And Robbie uses a sexual orgasm. He's like, that's instant. That is an example of a most subtle mind moment. Of course, he can explain it much better than...
Yeah, so Robbie, who he's talking about, Robbie Watkins, is actually one of the founders of this center. He has been studying for, you know, decades on this. He's very advanced. He teaches some of the Discovering Buddhism classes. One of my favorites is called Mind and Its Potential. If you ever get to take that class, they're about halfway through. That's one of the very first classes that you can take in DB, and that explains all of this, again, in so much more depth, because he'll go through this. He's got 6 weeks to talk about this, okay? So he can talk about that much in much more depth and give you. But, yeah, they do. They'll have 64, 65. We'll get into some more lists. They like the list, but they've got a very specific number. The thought process is that if we could clear our obscurations, if we could clear all that negative out, we would be able to see all of those mind moments. Okay? So somebody somewhere was able to see those, which is where I'm guessing that they came up with the, that's literally a Sandy guess. So don't go quoting that anyplace else. Don't go quoting that anyplace else. So that answers your question, that most subtle, right? Okay, kind of.
Sorry, just for your answer, you talk about, for example, the most subtle is when you faint, before you faint, or before you fall in deep sleep. I'm not sure in English name, in Chinese we call it alaye. I'm not sure it's the same thing. Actually, if it's alaye, actually it's not a true nature of mind, actually. It's still different from the true nature. Yeah.
Yeah, I would be interested in about that too, because I've heard the explanation a couple of different ways. Because, yeah, that most subtle.
Yeah. We can see, we can see it's the same thing, but just one of them has some contamination, and one of them don't have contamination.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mind we be very immediately very before faint actually is the true mind with contamination.
And that's what we're.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They say that really deep meditators, really deep practitioners, have that ability to see some of that subtle. So we pretty much only see the gross. We may have glimpses of that subtle mind, but they say a deep meditator can achieve shinye. There's different names for it. Again, different, but they can actually see some of that true nature and can go deep. And pretty much every study that you have read about will a lot be the Tibetan Buddhist meditators that they're using when they'll hook the brain waves up and do all of that. So because there are a lot of, do you have another question? There are a lot of the people, the meditators that they use for a lot of the studies. Right behind you.
Okay. What do you mean by most subtle?
Okay, so we have that gross memory. That's what we're talking about, that high level. We know what we ate for dinner. We can pretty much tell you what we did for our birthdays last year. The things we're aware of all the time. Okay? So that's the gross level. And then the subtle is kind of that subconscious. Okay? That our minds are kind of work on. Most of the time we're not really aware of them. You know, that stuff that happens that you just, you know, I want a drink. So you want to go get a drink, but you don't actually think, I'm going to get up, I'm going to walk across, I'm going to open the refrigerator. We don't even think that stuff, right? We just do it. Or the reactions that we do, breathing. We don't think about breathing, we just do it. Okay? So it's all these things that happen in our minds.
I want to find some word in my language to kind of understand it better. I guess I will check the dictionary.
Yeah, let's check the dictionary. So what's Spanish? Because that's something that I can ask, because we Geshe-la, they will. So let's find something. If you find something that you think is right, then let's make sure that we ask one of the Geshe's or somebody, because we have people that speak other languages here. Just to make sure, because we want to make sure that you're getting exactly the correct thing. Yes, sir.
I think maybe we can understand the mind just like onion.
So yes.
I don't know. Most of that is most something contaminating stuff, just like some sand or some dirt. Then you peel off this. Then you get some more pure, but still have contamination. Then pure the other way. Then
I really like that.
Very core is the pure one. Is the pure nature of mind.
Yeah.
That one is not change in no contamination. You can refer.
Yeah, that's actually a really good. Did everybody hear that? That's actually a very good analogy, was peeling off the layers of an onion. And that's really what we're trying to do, so that when that rebirth, okay, happens, because we're going to get into karma now. In fact, what time is it? We better get cruel.
Contamination by what?
The negative. Negative. The negative mind. Anger. Pride. Ignorance. All of the negatives.
So it's something that doesn't necessarily react?
It's not. Oh, it
obscures.
It obscures, yeah. So, yeah.
The negative doesn't reach the core of the mind?
Well, it doesn't, no. But it will ride on it.
Okay.
That's probably the best way I can kind of give that analogy. So it's, again, that pure nature of the mind that we all have, that is pure, but that negative or positive energy, karma, things like that will kind of ride on it. I think that's probably a good way to explain that one. So what does that give you? These are opportunities to practice. Again, this is all about opportunities to practice. How do you control your mind? Okay, samsara, you hear this word all the time too. Beginningless recurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of karma. This is cyclic existence. Rebirth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death. Samsara. You hear that word all the time. Karma. And we're going to wink through this. Cause and effect. Karma means action. Karma means action. Cause and effect. Positive actions produce happiness. Negative actions produce suffering. Karma is a psychological process. It is not this cosmic scoreboard out there. There's not this, you know, check off type of thing. So now let's go through it. I'm going to kind of wing through this, and then we'll pause and do some questions, because I'm running out of time. So now instead of a half an hour to talk about karma, we've got like 20 minutes. Karma is definite. Let's give some laws of karma. Karma is definite. Virtuous actions always bring positive. Negative actions always bring suffering. Karma expands over time. So something nice that you do for somebody expands. You never know. You never know. Sometimes some of the smallest things that I've done have really expanded and meant so much, and I find out about it later. Same thing with negative. Now, my green box didn't show up, but it's no result without a cause. You will never experience a result without you having created the cause. Okay? I can come up and I can punch you. My karma, that's now my negative karma. How you react to that is yours, but you won't be karmically affected by my hit. Okay? Karma is not lost. Actions always produce a result. There's only two ways that you can get out of this. One, the imprints are purified. Two, if they're destroyed. How are they destroyed? By becoming a Buddha. Okay? At that point, they're all gone. Or they're purified. Okay? If they ripen, you'll hear that word, karmic seeds ripening. That means that the things that are happening to you right now, those are karmic seeds ripening. And again, we'll go through this and then we'll stop and ask questions. So these are four laws of karma. Definite, expands over time, no result without the cause, and karma is not lost. Okay, so what are some of these behaviors that can cause the karma? Your body, your speech, and your mind. You do actions with your body, with your speech, and with your mind. That's how we interact with the world around us. Whether something we say, something we physically do, or something we think, right? So killing with your body, what do we do with killing? Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. What does that mean with the body? Killing. I bet everybody in here says, oh, I would never kill anybody, right? Every time you drive a car, you're killing bugs. All right? Swatting a mosquito, we're killing. We don't think about it that way. But from a Buddhist perspective, you're killing a sentient being. So we kill every day when we don't think about it. Now, we're not out killing people. We're not out killing. If you're hunting and you're killing animals for food, we're going to get into some of these other things. But we actually kill every day. Stealing, I don't steal, right? Do we all pretty much say that? You know what? You take those paper clips from the office. You take a stamp from the office. Stealing. If you take that which isn't offered, it is called stealing. Are there levels of this? Yes, we'll get into that. But we think that, well, we don't do any of these bad things, or we don't do very much of them. We do them every day. Stealing. Sexual misconduct, okay? That could mean a lot of different things. Doesn't necessarily mean raping or doing some of these other things, but, you know, take that. There's a lot of different levels of that. If somebody doesn't want it, there's a lot of stuff in the press right now about sexual misconduct. I'm just going to leave it right there. Speech. Lying, harsh speech, divisive speech, and gossip. We lie, little white lies. How do I look in this? You look fine. It's a white lie, but I like them. We still use them. Harsh speech, that's being angry at something, saying something that is hurtful, especially being hurtful with intention. That's harsh speech. Divisive speech. Oh, you know, Chris, you know, we let him do this stuff, but we don't. So if you try to divide people, sometimes we do that at work. Okay? If you think about it, that divide and conquer thing happens at work all the time. So you try to divide, you get people on your side instead of their side, divisive speech. And again, part of this is we're going to get into this intention of things. Gossip, we all can do that. Sometimes it's real nyeh, but sometimes it's not. Just talking about people, just talking about others is gossip. Mind, the things we do with our mind, we covet things. Anger in our mind, whether it comes out, it's still in our mind. We're thinking about it, okay? So, again, this is about our mind. And wrong view. Wrong view can come at a lot of different levels and a lot of different things. Sometimes it's willful ignorance. We know better. Sometimes it's knowing. There's so many different levels of wrong view, and I should actually... Any mistaken or deluded understanding as opposed to deluded minds, such as the three poisons that lead to suffering. In Buddhism, there are various ways of defining wrong views. The most common one is the last of the 10 non-virtues, also known as heresy. So some of this is, if I sat up here and I started talking bad about another religion, We don't do that. That's wrong view, okay? You just, there's things that you don't do. Things that, it's not, I'm trying to explain this without getting too, you got any good ones? Because it gets a little funny. Wrong view can be that it's not about, well, my religion's better. That's, you don't say those things.
It was where you think that, oh, what was I going to say?
It's not necessarily ignorance.
Right.
Okay?
That's
so don't
different.
Mix it up with ignorance. That's a different thing.
It's like you think that karma really doesn't affect you.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of different ways to look at this. If you try to say that karma doesn't affect you, okay, when you know that it does after you take this class and you know everything about it. So it's kind of just looking at things. It's a really hard one to explain from a Western perspective because we tend to think of wrong view as it's mistaken when it's not really, it's a little bit more willful than that. So willful ignorance might be a good way to put that. So these are the 10 non-virtuous actions. This is kind of the basis for some of this karmic action and karmic results that are going to come. Okay, karmic seeds. Intention, motivation, action, weight of the action, result. What's the end result? And rejoice in the result. So all of these things have to happen before that karmic seed is planted. When I say this, intention and motivation, I use the example of you drove here and you probably rolled over some ants, right? So did you intend to kill anything? No. Okay, so you had no intention of actually hurting something. You didn't go in that car and drive and think, oh, I'm going to kill all these bugs when I go in, right? If you did that, then your intention, so it was an accident. You didn't mean to do it. So all of this is like karmic weight. How much weight? Since you didn't mean to, okay, so less weight than if you mean to. Okay, make sense? I'm going to intentionally do something bad, larger karmic weight. It was an accident, less, there's still karmic weight, but much less. I'm going to hunt an elephant versus kill a mosquito. Okay, karmic weight, what is that result going to be? The action. So that's the weight of the action, and do you actually do it? Okay? Do you actually go out there and kill that thing? So that's that action. You actually do it. What's the result? The end result of this. The ant dies, the elephant dies. What if it's just wounded? What actually happened? What's the result of this action? Okay, this all has to come into play in order for that karmic seed to happen. Okay, and how much? Okay? You drive here, you kill all these bugs, and now you're happy about it. You rejoice in the results of this. Bigger karmic weight. You get here, you know, you drove here, you accidentally killed it, now I feel bad about it. I actually have a little prayer thing on my car, because I do feel bad about it. So I actually have, I'm not joking, you can go look. I have a little prayer on my car. Actually, not this car, it's my car at home. Because I know that I'm doing this. But again, so I'm creating all of these karmic seeds because I know that just living on this planet, I'm killing things. So I'm trying to lessen my karmic weight, my negative karma. Karma is also positive. We tend to forget that. We tend to not talk about the good karma. We're all sitting here in the United States in a war-free zone, sitting at the Karmapa Center, which has heat and air and water and all these things. So we have this wonderful karma, too. So karma is not always bad. People always talk about the bad, but karma, there's good karma too. It's the positive and negative. Okay? Karma. So, who can tell me what this law is? Gravity. Gravity, what's the law of gravity? Can you explain it?
Mass times acceleration.
Okay, so that's a natural law, right? Who discovered gravity? Sir Isaac Newton? The whole apple thing, we've got that, right? Natural law, most of us believe every single thing about it and we can't even explain it, right? Karma, natural law. The Buddha discovered it. He's like Sir Isaac Newton. Same thing. So it's the same principle. We accept the law of gravity. Question, we accept this. We can't explain it. We know who discovered it. We go with it because it seems to be true. Same thing for karma. Start to study it. The Buddha discovered it. Natural law. Yes, sir.
But we believe, or Buddhists believe, that no one is keeping score. It's just a naturally occurring kind of check and balance, I guess.
Yep. For yourself.
So it's not sin.
It's not sin. And there's no... There. What's a good way to put this? It's not a guilt thing. Guilt is not even a word in Tibet. Do you know that? The Dalai Lama didn't even understand guilt when he came here.
One other question. Do Buddhists see natural phenomena such as, let's say, earthquake or hurricanes
karma.
As a result of karma?
Karma. It's all karma. All of it's karma.
They happened long before people were on this earth.
Are we? Yeah. We have another? Okay, go ahead, because I've got a few going on here, but it's all going to come together. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, I know that it's not the scoreboard, but is there some concept of evenness for your karma in terms of...
Okay, so let's go down this path a little bit. Okay, so the first thing y'all are doing is you're going, you already have a scoreboard in your head, don't you? Because that's what we're doing. Oh, I've got karma, bad karma. Okay, well, for yourself, sure. But that's the power of Buddhism. That's the power of the thought because I can control it. If I understand karma and if I start to work with it, it takes the victimization off of me. I now can do something about it. So everything that I'm experiencing now is the result of what whoever the mind holder, now we're getting deep. How much time do I have? Oh, 15, not even that if we're going to do a meditation. Okay, so again, now I'm going to start throwing concepts so we can start to bring some of the stuff together. And again, I've got 15 minutes, people. You're not going to get it totally. Do you know how we talk about the environment? We talk about the earth. And we talk about we need to take care of the earth for the children that come after us and the people that come after us. Right? You know, save the water, clean the water, save the planet for the people that come after us. Think about your mind as the earth. So whoever held the mind of Sandy in the past did a very good job to me because a lot of my life is really good. So whoever held this mind in the past to me, have I had some problems? Yeah, I'm a cancer survivor. I dropped my computer. That's not good karma. Okay, but I purified that seed. But whoever held that mind in the past to me did a very good job. And now my responsibility is to take care of my mind and try to purify and try to keep it as well as I can. A, I want to become a Buddha. If I could do it in this lifetime, man, I would be there. I'm going to keep working on it because if I can't do that and I fall short, then at least I've taken care of my mind for the next mind holder. Now, it is not Sandy that is being reborn. And remember what we said about the mind has been this continuity, okay? No beginning. No end. We have all lived on this planet or others. Our minds have been around for eons. I guarantee you every single one of us in this room has been a bug, has been a dog, has been a cat. We have been each other's brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, children, because our minds are continually being reborn. And we tend to, some of the thought processes that we tend to kind of be, I want to be careful here, but around each other, okay? So I could be reborn as a dog, I could be reborn as a cockroach, depending on all this karma that I've been building up, because it's not just karma from the last lifetime, it's karma I've been carrying with me for eons. Eons and eons. It's not just the last lifetime. I know that this is like, whoa. It's just a touch. All we can do is start to talk about it, and then you could find out more. But this idea of this karmic boomerang, oh, they're going to get it. Karma's a bitch. I mean, these are some of the memes that we hear. Okay? Instant karma very rarely happens.
Can we see just like a scoring system? Karma doesn't have a scoring
system is somebody to put a thing, then get a good score, then better thing, then get a decrease the score, and then eventually if you have good score, you refer to a good family or...
Yeah, so you kind of, so we're back to the scoreboard type of thing, okay? And so when I kind of use that, we have each of us, it's not a comparative thing. Better karma, worse karma. So I'm not going to keep a scoreboard. Oh, something bad happened to you. You must have done something bad in a previous life. That's judgment, isn't it? Then we start looking at everybody else. Ooh. Okay, so that takes, number one, that takes compassion out, right? We all have done these bad things. I guarantee you we have all done worse. So this judging and pointing, you've got to lose that. Okay, we've all been there. We've all done worse. You can keep a scoreboard on your own actions in your head. I actually do that kind of thing every day because I wake up in the morning and I have an intention. I set a motivation for my day. All right. I want to have a good day. I'm going to try to be nice and kind. I'm going to be aware of all these things that I try to do. At the end of the day, I will purify. At the end of the day, I will sit down and I will do a purification that I can walk through with you next time. Okay. That at the end of the day, but I'll actually sit, what did I do good today? What did I do bad? What can I do better? Well, you know, I think I did okay most of the day. I know I got impatient at Best Buy when I stood in line, but I did hold it. Okay, I recognize it. So rejoice for me because I saw it. I recognized it earlier, right away. So what did I do good? What did I do bad? Is there something I can fix? Is it something I should just think about and do better tomorrow? Never beat yourself up. We're doing the best we can. But be aware. Are there things I could have done better? You know what? I'm going to do them better tomorrow. And just even try that for a week. You know, again, this is about, you know, for you guys, I'm just laying it out there to cherry pick through what works. This is stuff I try to do every day. So, karma. Intention, action, result, and rejoicing. All those things have to happen. Are you planting flowers or weeds? You have a choice. Part of purifying and working on this is going into that garden of your mind and pulling those weeds out and planting flowers or whatever you want, food. So it's a garden. Kind of makes sense a little bit. The analogies are somewhat, again, this is just a start. Okay, questions. Did I cover? Yeah, I know.
So, Sandy, you said there was no guilt in our practice, but you can talk about how we have regrets and how we deal with our regrets.
So, guilt is a negative word. Guilt is negative because guilt is crippling. Guilt is a weight. Guilt is hard to get past. Guilt is a negative. Regret is a positive because regret leaves room to make it better. I regret what I've done. I want to improve. I want to fix it. Guilt is a weight. Regret leaves room, right? So we have what we call the four opponent powers that help to purify. Okay, the four opponent powers. The power of regret purifies the experience similar to the cause. So regret, reliance, remedy, and resolve. Regret, reliance, remedy, and resolve. These are what's called the four opponent powers. So at the end of the night, when I think of the things that I've done wrong, again, try not to live with guilt over it. Switch it to regret. Is there something I can do to change it? Right? Regret. If I can do it, then maybe I'm going to do it. Reliance. Okay, I rely on the teachings. If I follow the teachings, this is my, I rely on these. So far they've worked for me, so I'm going to keep doing it until they don't. Because right now they're working. So I rely on the teachings. Remedy. I'm going to apply a remedy to this. So let's think this through. So I did something horrible once, maybe a long time ago to somebody, and I've been living with guilt over it. Now I'm going to try to switch it and live with regret and see if there's something I can do. Now you have to think about your motives. You go in and tell that person, you know what, a long time ago, I'm really sorry that I treated you that way. Back in high school or whatever, I'm really sorry. And you apologize. So you apply a remedy. Okay, what if it's something that is more about you relieving your mind and now you've told this person some awful thing? Think about your intention. Always think about your intention for doing anything. If it's about you, you might want to rethink it. Okay, if it's for the betterment of somebody else, then that's okay. But think about your intention. But regret, reliance, remedy, resolve. I'm going to resolve not to do it again. Am I going to say I resolve never to do this again? No, I'm not, because that's really hard to do. So in order to not lie and be real, I'm going to resolve to not do it the rest of the month. I'm going to resolve not to do it for a week. So pick your battles here, people. Okay? Be real and honest with yourself. Okay, it's really hard if you have a habit energy that you do these things. I'm gonna resolve never to get mad and lying again. Yeah, right. You're gonna break that next week, maybe even tomorrow, and then you feel bad, and then you feel like you're always failing. Pick a time limit that is doable. I'm gonna resolve to do this. Yeah, I don't care if it's for a day, but pick a time limit so that you're gonna resolve to do this. That's realistic for you. So I do that. I try to do that every night. I can do things pretty quickly. Sometimes I'll really sit and think about it. Sometimes I can do this and, yeah, okay, done. But I'll try to do it almost every night because it's about my practice. If I really think I've done something horrible, I really will put some purification to it because I don't want those karmic states. I'm working on this.
Purification.
So there's lots of different purification that you can do, and those can be for much other classes. Some of them are just applying the four opponent powers to it and thinking about it. Some of it, there's very, very strong purification practices that are pretty deep. So there's different, and I confess I've done some of those too because I've not been an angel, okay, and I should do more. But see, this is about my mind. I am working with my mind. You guys try to think. There's a lot of people that come to this center that don't get into any of these practices. They just do mindfulness. That's okay, too. We've got people that come to the center that are not Buddhist. That's okay, too. We've got Christians and Jews and atheists, and it's just these are tools, but it's just learning. We have a lot of people that come to this center that are scientists and doctors because this is the science of the mind. So we've got all different kinds of people at all different kinds of levels here. That's the joy, I think, of Kanapa Center. So next time we're going to talk about precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death, the three scopes, and we're going to get into a little bit deeper of each of those three principal aspects of the path. And we're going to save the wisdom of emptiness for the fifth class because that's even deeper than karma. So you think your head was swimming tonight? Wait until class five. Any other questions? Yes, sir. This class always goes so fast for me. For you guys, it's probably slow, but for me.
Thanks. Sorry, what's it called? Wrong-mindedness?
Wrong view?
Wrong, thank you. I just wanted to remember.
Oh, just the name?
That's it.
Good. Wrong view. Okay, we've got time.
I swear I saw you spelled bodhicitta.
Oh, I spelled that 15 different ways, let me tell you. Actually, it's one of those things that you can spell a few different ways. It depends on which books you look at. Yep. So, yeah. Steely Dan. Bodhisattva is a bodhisattva is somebody who practices bodhicitta. Bodhisattva is the person. Bodhicitta is the thing. Okay, so we did. Let's do any more questions? Dozens. Feel free to use my email. But this again, I mean, we're just going over the top layer. The the Discovering Buddhism class, there's some great books. Even just the book on this class, Buddhism in a Nutshell, will explain a lot of these things a lot better. Again, Venerable Amy is the one who wrote the book. She comes here and teaches sometimes, but she's able to. So we have class. We have a lot of discussion. She has none of that in her books and in her audio. So she's explaining these things, and she's going into them in much more detail than I am. And she, of course, is much more advanced than I am. So there is not a book. It's books, plural. And it's actually, it doesn't come as a book. It comes as a CD that is thousands of pages, because each one of these modules has reading. I mean, you don't have to do any of it. You can just go and, you know, enjoy the class, or you can take it as a, like a college course where you're studying, and then you can actually take tests to where if you go through the 2 years and then do the special integration module, that you can try to get your certification in order to teach. I will tell you that there's a special module called Special Integration that includes a lot of extras that you have to go through before you can. That's kind of where I am. And I'm still years in just that one because it's a little time consuming, including 100,000 prostrations and a couple of long things. So if you even think about it when you're taking that class, look at that Special Integration module so you can start it right off the bat.
Geshe-la would say you don't have to do all those prostrations in this lifetime.
Well,
if you
can't get to them all in this lifetime. Yeah, I'm sure I must have done 100,000 by this time, I'm thinking. But there are some really great teachers in that Discovering Buddhism. They're all really good, you know. There's some great modules. So if I would really recommend, if you're thinking about it, again, they're probably about halfway. This is a 2-year course, and they're probably about just getting to the halfway point. You definitely can start at the beginning of whatever module. Don't try to jump in the middle of a module, but start at the beginning of a module, even if they are more advanced, and then you could sweep around, because a lot of it you can back up and catch. But the teachers are all really good because they know people are doing that. It's really hard if you have the karma to come at the end of the 2 years. I had the karma to come right when they started the 2 years. So I'm always thankful to that mind possessor from before. Okay, I'm going to wing through this next meditation. This is called Mind Like the Sky. Let's get comfortable. So get comfortable. Go through your 7-point meditation posture. Get yourself in a good position. This is one of the meditations that I enjoy. In our ordinary perceptions, our thoughts and feelings seem to be all there is to our mind. One thought, feeling, image, or idea after another. All these mental contents seem to fill up our minds completely, as if our minds are small, finite containers. But this is an illusion, a misperception on our parts. Our minds are vast, infinite, clear and spacious. Our minds have no boundaries, no limits. When we experience the vast, clear spaciousness of our mind, the clarity of our awareness, we begin to see how our thoughts and feelings are like clouds in the sky, simply passing through this vast, spacious awareness, not filling it up. Suddenly we have some space from the endless attachments, aversions, and dissatisfactions of life. Focus your attention on your breathing and breathe naturally. Use one of the breathing meditations you've learned, like counting the breaths, to settle your mind and bring it to a deeper state of focus and concentration, ready to engage in meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for the meditation session and think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. sorry. Start by practicing bare attention. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, loosen your concentration slightly. Emphasize the element of mindfulness in your meditation a little more strongly. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Allow your mind to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience, of consciousness. Try and forget that there's an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky. Completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with this experience. Clarity, spaciousness, awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through this clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shines through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds. The sky doesn't judge. The clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea, an image, or a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud, your mind is the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we tend to lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within each thought or feeling that occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It's as if all there are clouds and we've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open, without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress, without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. We're going to do this for just a couple of minutes. Just identify with the sky. Very brief meditation, but bring your attention back to the room. And we'll dedicate all the positive energy that we created through not only this practice of mindful meditation, but this entire class. Because we came and we sat and we learned about becoming a better person who's more at peace in this life and who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. Thank you all for coming. Hope I didn't confuse people too much. Any questions about class at all? And I hope you all have an awesome Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time. Try to be patient with your family. Think about this.